Hi, I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Craig Froelich, Chief Information Security Officer at Bank of America, a Fortune 25 company with more than 200,000 employees. To learn more about Bank of America, visit bankofamerica.com. Craig, welcome. Great to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited to spend some time with you. I've been following you for a long time, and this is the first time we've had a chance to connect.
So, Craig, before we dive into the discussion, tell us about your background, which includes nearly 20 years with Bank of America, and how you became CISO there.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 20 years. It seems like just yesterday I started with the company. But, I started my career as a technologist, almost 30 years ago, working for high-tech companies, making and selling products that are used by a lot of big enterprises like Bank of America. For about 5 years, I had my own company during the dot-com days, and it was reasonably successful, and we sold it at the end. But I had never worked for a customer before. I'd never worked for somebody who actually was responsible for using the technology that I was helping to build every day. And, I was given a chance to be able to work at Bank of America. And, I started in IT. I've had lots of different roles over the last 20 years, always pretty technical. But regardless of whether I was working in Bank of America or in high tech, one of the things that's always been threaded throughout my entire career is a real love for security. Long before it was cybersecurity, when it was information security, or I remember a time when I was in a loss prevention department, this was something that was always really interesting to me. So, I think probably in around 2003, 2004, I decided to do it full time rather than kind of doing part of the work. And, I've been CISO for Bank of America now for going on almost 7 years.
So, Craig, we're here today to talk about the intersection of neurodiversity and cybersecurity. You wrote an article in Business Insider, fantastic article, got us interested in talking to you. What prompted you to write that article?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. I think first and foremost, there were a couple drivers for the article for me. One, I think you know better than most, given all of the research that you've done, that this is a negative unemployment marketplace, and we need as many bright minds as we possibly can to be able to think about how to be able to get ahead of the adversaries. And so, one, that was kind of part of the driver. Two, I deeply believe in diversity and inclusiveness. And, one of the things that's interesting to me about neurodiversity is that it's almost like the Invisible Diversity Initiative, because, so many people are neurodiverse, but yet they don't raise their hand and let people know. You may not necessarily be aware. And really what I think is important is I've spent a lot of time working with people who are neurodiverse and talking to them is, one, that they want to be seen as just having a difference, but not being disabled. And I think really, when you think through that, it's really about the fact that people just process differently. And when you're thinking about really hard problems, like being able to defend an organization like Bank of America from all forms of threats, you want to have as many smart minds to be able to help solve that problem. And neurodiverse people can give you a different way of thinking about the problem. And why wouldn't you want to have more of those around the table?
So I'm curious, Craig, who falls into the neurodiverse population? For me, I immediately think of people who are on the spectrum, autism, Asperger's, but it's probably more than that.
It is. It's neurodiverse is a pretty broad term. And you're right. There are people that you've mentioned that fall into the category. But, people who have ADHD, that are dyslexic, that there are lots of people that fit into being neurodiverse. And I think really the important thing is what I said before, which is it's really just the way that people process information differently. Being dyslexic, you just think and operate in different ways. And, you have to retrain your brain in some ways to be able to, in some ways to read, at the same way as other people. But by being dyslexic, you also have an untapped capability to be able to process differently than I do. And so there are lots of people who are neurodiverse that think differently and that they can really bring interesting insights to the company and to the places that they work for.
So let's try to bridge that population to cybersecurity. You wrote in the article that neurodiversity is an important advantage. How is it an advantage in cyber?
Well, you know, I think, you know, let's talk about some of the really technical hard jobs around cyber. You know, everything from, you know, the pattern matching that's required when you think about signature development for malware, reverse engineering. You know, there are lots of jobs that are very technically deep and that really require a complex mathematical mind or pattern matching to be able to be done. People who are neurodiverse, that comes really easy for them in some cases, much easier than it does for people who are not neurodiverse like myself. And, you know, being able to have them at the table and being able to work on some of those problems, it's really impressive as to the types of things that they can bring out and get done differently and faster and in better outcomes than what you might find from a non-neurodiverse population.
Well, as the CISO at one of the world's largest corporations, I don't have to tell you that we're in the midst of a labor epidemic in our industry. Despite COVID and despite the opportunities for people to cross over and get started, we have enough openings to fill about 50 NFL stadiums. So how can we look at the neurodiverse population? Are there enough people to make a dent?
Well, I think first and foremost, there aren't enough people. And I think neurodiversity and tapping into the neurodiverse community has to be part of a comprehensive and wholesome development strategy where you both acquire and grow people in the organization. And you have to bring them in from all walks of life. So just as if we're spending time bringing in people who are neurodiverse, we're also spending time bringing in people who come from non-traditional backgrounds. So, you know, there's traditional white collar, there's blue collar, there's also no collar, people who don't necessarily have the traditional backgrounds and educations. We want to be able to find a path for all folks that are interested in being able to take advantage of cyber. And I think historically, people who have sat in seats like mine, you know, they use really complex language. You know, they're happy to talk about things that are, complicated, or in some cases using military analogies to be able to talk about things in kind of wartime ways, that can sometimes turn people off. And so we also have to make it more approachable so that more people think about cybersecurity as not just something that is kind of off in the distance that they would never be able to do, but that they can actually see themselves doing it and as part of a career path.
So what do we need to do? How do we as an industry send out a help wanted message to the neurodiverse population?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to start. So, you know, you mentioned the byline that I wrote last year. I think more of my peers and myself have to spend time making sure that people who are neurodiverse realize that this is an opportunity for them and that not only do we need them, but we want them to be part of our organization. So that's kind of the first step, which is, you know, broader awareness, talking about it publicly. The second is to be able to work with partners in the community. So that there are lots of companies who are doing really great work in this space. And, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. When you're going through, for example, the interview process with somebody who's neurodiverse, you have to interview them differently. You have to be able to ask direct questions rather than open-ended questions. You have to be able to use different types of technology to be able to assess their skills. And so, you know, broadening the way that you think about, you know, the way you write your job descriptions, the way you're going through your interview process, the things that you do, all of that has to be accounted for. And then, of course, once you have them in your organization, you've got to think about this as a long-term career. This is not a pilot. This is not a program. These are people who hopefully will have a career in an organization like I've had over the last 20 years. And so you have to think about all of the environmental conditions that are required in order to help somebody who's neurodiverse be successful. Sometimes that can be things like lighting or configurations of the where they sit, but it's also in the meeting routines and how you set stuff up. One of the people in the team that I spent a lot of time with, you know, she sent me an email a while back and said, "Hey, you know, when I'm getting ready for your meeting, it would be great if you sent me all of the materials in advance." She's dyslexic and she wanted to be able to read them in advance so that way she had a chance to be able to think about it. And I changed my meeting routine by doing that. So we had lots more time for open discussion. And all of a sudden I started to hear more and see more from her in the conversations, and the insights that she provided were fantastic. So you really have to think about it comprehensively, not just about acquiring from outside and growing more talent in the community, but you also have to think about what you're going to do to grow people in your own organization. People who may already be there, people who may already be neurodiverse, but haven't felt like they have an opportunity to be able to raise their hand because they may fear that there's some sort of, negative stigma associated with it.
So there are dozens of cybersecurity roles in a large enterprise, and that would be true actually in the vendor community. You have everything from SOC analysts to forensic investigators, incident responders, and so on. Are there some positions you can think of that are maybe more suited to the neurodiverse community? And then are there some positions where maybe it's probably not a good fit?
Well, we're just, I think, early on in understanding where neurodiverse people can play best and, where it may not be a fit. But some of the early insights that I've seen is that, not just in the way that you communicate with them and making sure that you're having direct conversations rather than open-ended conversations, it's also the same types of tasks and activities that they focus on. So I mentioned a job like malware reverse engineering, sitting at a computer and looking at patterns and looking at data, doing data analytics, hunting. These are things that we found have worked really well for people who are neurodiverse. I don't know that I would necessarily take somebody who's neurodiverse and ask them to go, interact with our business units, because, many people who are neurodiverse, they don't feel comfortable in social situations. And somebody who is a traditional, as we would call it, a business information security officer, that's part of their role and responsibility. So, I think we've still got a lot to learn there. But, increasingly, it's not about the quantity in terms of going wide. It's about finding those really important positions and getting really good quality and going deep with lots of people who are neurodiverse.
So Craig, without naming names, can you think of someone who you've worked with or somebody who might even be on your team who comes out of the neurodiverse community and, the benefits of having somebody like them?
Yeah, I mentioned one earlier, this woman that I work with pretty closely. She is, without a doubt, probably one of the world's best cryptographers I've ever seen. You wouldn't know her name. She's not flashy by any stretch of the imagination, but she is just amazing with cryptography. And she's humble. She's constantly trying to get better. And I'm actually much better, and we're much better for having her a part of the organization. She's been neurodiverse her entire life, but it was really only until I started talking publicly about neurodiversity and how we had to remove the stigma from neurodiversity that she felt comfortable enough to be able to raise her hand and say that she was neurodiverse. And when she did that, all of a sudden, not only did we take a great performer and see all of the insights from her, but she became even better. She was starting to give us new insights because we were learning how to work with her differently because she was open with the fact that she needed to be able to process information differently. So this invisible diversity initiative is really important because there's so many people who we work with every day that may in fact actually be neurodiverse, but have never felt comfortable with being able to express that. And so part of this is not just about making sure that we bring lots of people to the table, but it's also about figuring out how people who are already neurodiverse that you already have in your workplace can feel comfortable in being able to self-identify.
So where does a CISO start, right? So your peers are watching this, Fortune 500 CISOs, Global 2000, anybody who's in a position to employ cybersecurity professionals, it makes sense. They'd like to tap into that community, but they don't have a personal awareness. There's nobody in their family. It's just not something that they're familiar with. How do they start to do that reach out?
Well, I think the first thing is to start. Right. It may feel daunting, but it's amazing the number of people in the neurodiverse community that are waiting for phone calls from folks like me. There are lots of different nonprofit organizations and community groups and technology companies and people like me that would love to be able to find more people to partner with. So the first thing is, one, you have to take the first step. And the first step is to find people who already have experience and background and ask questions and get involved. That's how I started. I reached out to people that I knew that were already involved, and they've been great in being able to educate me and kind of navigating to figure out what to do next. Once I figured it out in terms of what people have done before, then I could figure out how to create a program and build something inside the company that I work for.
So what about the neurodiverse community and the people who are watching you and they're interested and, you know, this sounds exciting and they'd like to get involved? How do they make themselves known? What's the best way for a candidate to get themselves in front of a potential employer?
Well, I think there's probably a couple different ways, and it probably depends on the company. But, you know, when most people are interviewing for a job, they have a resume. And I think it's actually okay to put on the resume that they're neurodiverse.
Right.
And talk about how that could actually be a strength and talk about the different skill sets that that may bring to the table. You know, so often the resumes are written down with, these are the accomplishments I did at my previous employer. Many times neurodiverse people don't necessarily have a previous employer, or it may be in a different industry and it may not feel like it's directly connected to the work for somebody who's doing cybersecurity. So, talking about your neurodiverse skills and what you can bring to the table is really important. One of the people that we brought in through our cohort group about a year and a half ago, he worked at a yogurt shop, and he was told his entire life that he was never going to be able to live on his own. You know, he lived with his parents. They drove him to and from work. Fast forward to where he is today, he's got his own apartment. He's working in our tech teams. He's doing great work for us. And, you know, he's living his life, and he's built up a network of people around him that are neurodiverse and a support group. And none of that would have been possible if we had just looked at the resume and said, well, he works at a yogurt shop. Why would he be good in a tech or cyber organization? But when we started to have the questions and say, oh, he's really great at pattern matching, and these are the skills that he can bring to the table, it was amazing to see what he was able to do for us.
Well, it's great having you here with us today. I think just talking about it, the media needs to cover it. We need to generate more awareness. We're going to try to do our part, is hopefully going to move things along. Before we let you go, Craig, it's hard to have somebody in your position and not ask a question about the COVID-19 pandemic. And of course, more broadly, we cover cybercrime and cybersecurity. So I would like to ask you, in your opinion, what's the biggest challenge for CISOs at large enterprises right now?
Well, I think you nailed it. I think the two things. One, we've got this global pandemic, which is an absolute human tragedy and crisis that we have on our hands. And, that's forced companies like mine and everybody around us to work and act differently. And you know firsthand that any cyber adversary, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to look for these moments when there is confusion or there's a chaos or there's a headline event, and they're going to take advantage of it. So whether it be something as simple as phishing or vishing and taking advantage of, what's in the headline news related to vaccines and to the pandemic, that's one thing. But we've also, and amidst other companies, have people who work from home. And, we've now got to think about how, as a security professional, we're going to extend the security for somebody who's used to be working in the office to now somebody who's working from home and has all of the things that come along with that. They have all of the IoT devices and everything else. So it's a really complicated world. We have adversaries that are more and more complex and more busy than ever before. And we've got a diversified environment where we're expected to be able to protect our clients and our customers and do that in ways that we never really probably anticipated previously. So 2020, without a doubt, was probably the most complicated year, I think, for security professionals. I was hoping that 2020 would put a bookend, right? We would end it in December 31st. Unfortunately, I think there may be 60 or 65 weeks in 2020, and we can't quite put it all behind us. But I am hopeful that with things like the vaccine that's on the way, with other things that have been taking place in the security community, that we'll be able to get to a more normalized place where cybercrime is less efficient and less effective than it was before, and that we're going to be in a situation where clients and customers and our employees, regardless of where they work, that the security that they expect to be with them, that's world class, will follow that.
Well, Craig, it was great having you on today. You made an impact, and I think sometimes it's just about, one person touching another person, and, we go from there. So we're a small enterprise compared to the Bank of America, but we're growing, and we had two job openings. We just filled one. And when I leave the studio, I'm going to go talk to our director of operations and make sure that neurodiverse is in that other job opening so that we're making a call out. So, thank you
That's
for
awesome.
For the awareness.
Thank you for everything you're doing. I hope, somebody gets value out of our conversation. And I hope that in a few years from now that NeuroDiverse is seen just like any other diversity program, and that, people are feeling comfortable with being able to realize that this is not about, a disability, but this is about differences and how people process differently, and that people who are neurodiverse have to be part of our workforce, and they already are. We just need to figure out how to be able to allow them to do that without a stigma.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope we could do this again later in the year.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you, and stay safe.
I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. Visit us on the web at cybercrimemagazine.com. Joining us today was Craig Froelich, Chief Information Security Officer at Bank of America, a Fortune 25 company with more than 200,000 employees. To learn more about Bank of America, visit bankofamerica.com.